Well, good morning. Good to be with everybody, and always enjoy coming to Saratoga. I know we just have a few minutes for the class, so I'll wait to say some introductions when we have a longer time to do that. If you will, open up your New Testaments to Galatians, the sixth chapter, and we'll read together verses 1 through 5. Paul writes, "Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load." Young preacher once asked his father, he was also a preacher, he said, "Dad, what should I preach this Sunday?" as he was starting out his work. And years of being in the trenches shaped a deliberate response. The older man said, "Preach to the brokenhearted. There's one in every pew." The longer that I have worked with people and the longer that I have preached over 40 years now, I know how true that is. That often we don't even know some of the stories that are going on. To bear the burdens of one another is one of the central thoughts of the Bible. The fact that we should love one another. In fact, he's going to talk about that in the text as we refer to it. There's so many one another passages, and if you think about them, they can have meaning in the universal church. There are ways that we can contact people today, for instance, via telephones and FaceTime and all of that, that we can obviously have impact on others. But where does that idea find its most useful place? And that's going to be in a local fellowship. The fact that we are members one of another. Yes, brethren are brethren wherever they are. If they're in Africa, America, it doesn't matter. And we are one with them. And when we go to meet them, we understand that. But the idea that I can be a functioning part of a body has little meaning to a brother that's that far away from me. But right here in Saratoga, right here, you have people that you should be involved with in that way. And to bear the burdens of one another. Now, there's something interesting about this text that I think we need to know. You realize verses and chapters were supplied many, many, many years after so that we could access. Like if I tell you to turn to Galatians 6, chapter 6, verses 1 through 5, you know where to go. But sometimes chapters and verses aren't at the proper division. And I think we have one of those kind of examples here. If you're using a more modern translation, if you'll back up in chapter 5, you'll notice that verses 16 through verse 24 are in one paragraph. Right? You have one idea going on there. And then if you'll look at verse 25, it's indented so that you have a new paragraph. And verse 26, I really believe the indentation should have occurred at verse 26, and that verse 26 really belongs with the part that we just read. And here's the reason for that. There is a way that the ancients would write in order to indicate that a block of material went together. For instance, if you study the Sermon on the Mount and you read the Beatitudes, I think most of us realize the Beatitudes go together, right? Blessed are, and then he tells us why. And these are the law, this is the law of the kingdom. But how do the Beatitudes begin and how do they end? They begin with the same phrase, not the very first phrase, blessed are the poor in spirit. But what does he say? He's always a blessing. If you are this, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. How does it end? Blessed are you if you're persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So that the Beatitudes go together because they would begin it with the same phrase, they would end it with the same phrase. So look at verse 16 of chapter 5. He says, "But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the lust of the flesh." The Spirit and the flesh being not thinking just of flesh of this physical body, but of a mindset that only lives for what we can see and hear and do here. And the body, of course, is involved in that. But it's a mindset versus the mindset that follows the Spirit. and the fruit of the Spirit that he talks about in this. But he uses that phrase, walk in the Spirit. Then notice if you drop down to verse 25, he ends that by saying, if we live by the Spirit, the English Standard says, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. But if you're using the New King James, it says, if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Of course, that's much what the English Standard is saying by keeping in step with. So it begins with verse 16, I say then, walk in the Spirit. And it ends at verse 25 by saying, if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. So that is a section, all right, from verse 16 to verse 25. All of that goes together. And then the next verse begins another thought. And I believe that thought belongs with the section that we're looking at. You want to know, I think, first of all, what he's saying to us. You want to know how you ought not to treat one another. Because the bearing of burdens is going to be the exact opposite of the attitudes that are talked about in verse 26. First of all, he says, let us not be conceited. Conceit poisons any relationship. It is that idea of a high opinion of ourselves instead of thinking of others. I always remember the story of Muhammad Ali. If I ever think about somebody that put themselves forward, you know, big shot and all of that. Of course, sometimes people are just as good as they tell you they are. And he knew it, and he acted like it in his younger days. But he was on a plane one time, and Muhammad Ali was on a plane, and the stewardess came by and said, Mr. Ali, he's in first class. She said, please buckle up, or we're getting ready to take off. And he didn't buckle up. So she comes by again. I mean, things are getting closer to where they need. She said, Mr. Ali, you need to buckle up. We're about to take off. Finally, he just looked there, and he said, honey, he said, Superman don't need no seatbelt. She looked at him and said, honey, Superman don't need no airplane, so buckle up. Well, I can imagine his attitude. You remember how often that would cause trouble with anybody if you were that high-minded of yourself. If we are conceited, then he says, do not provoke one another. Here's how it manifests itself. You ever know congregations where you have people like that? Diotrephes, I would think. That was his church. John having to upbraid or anticipate that he's going to have to upbraid him, write some scathing words to him. But the idea that if I'm superior to you, then I'm better than you, I'll show you. And so it jabs constantly, provokes, causing trouble. Envying one another, again, an attitude of conceit. If I'm only thinking of myself, which is what conceit is, then when I do realize somebody's better than me, I do see that they have more talent and they have more gifts than I do, then I resent it and I envy and all the terrible kinds of things that come out of that. Well, there's a whole lesson in just, you know, filling out that verse. Let's take it and work on it. But what I want us to do is to work on what he wants us to do. How should we treat one another? And I believe, brothers and sisters, that verse 1 is his illustration of the things that he's going to say to us in verses 2 through 5. So start with me there at verse 2. Here's what he commands. The poison one another's or provoke one another, envying one another, those are the ways we're not to be toward one another. Very opposite of what he wants us to do here. Bear, opposite attitude. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. I think about our master. Jesus bears us up, doesn't he? Cast all your care upon him, for he cares for you. 1 Peter 5, verse 7. I'm going to tell you around my house. That's a passage that we quote a lot. You go through life, you don't have to go very long. That's going to be a favorite verse. You're going to cast your care upon him because he cares for us no matter what happens. I think about what he says to us in Matthew 11:28. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Even the Old Testament speaks of God in Psalms 55:22. Cast your burden on the Lord and he shall sustain you. He shall never permit the righteous to be moved. Our God bears us up, and Jesus again and again did that in his own life on earth and of course does now for us. Bears bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. You never think that sometimes people say, well, we're not under law today. No, we're not under the law of Moses, but don't ever think that we're not under law. He says here very clearly that this is Christ's law. Law standing for how something is to be, this the way something is to work. We understand that. That's the reason laws exist. Jesus is not willy-nilly about you can just do whatever you want to do and be whatever you want to be. That's a mindset, I think, that's prevalent, predominant in our religious world today, that there just is no law. God has no, he has nothing that he commands us. No, he has a lot he commands of us. And even now, as we read this text, he is commanding us to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill, bring to pass the law of our master. And that law, folks, is a law of love. If you back up in chapter 5, look with me in verse 13. He says, for you were called to freedom, brothers, but only do not use your freedom as an opportunity of the flesh, but through love serve one another. There is a difference in the system we're under than it was with all the minutiae that you think the law of Moses imposed upon the people. But he said, don't think that freedom means that you can just be any way you want to be. You can't serve the flesh, but through love, here's one of the great one another passages, serve one another. For, he talks about that old law. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, what it said back in Leviticus, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. What was to have been the point of the law of Moses failed in people. But the point of Jesus Christ is that very thing. We are to love the Lord our God with all our heart and soul and mind, the very first commandment. The second, like unto it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. In John 13, 34, Jesus said, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I've loved you, that you also love one another. Or in John 15, 12, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. A new commandment, not new. Leviticus said it long ago, but a new commandment in how it would be demonstrated by Jesus on the cross, how he would show us what it meant to love one another. Do you ever get down? Do you ever have such burdens that bear upon you that they are beyond your ability to carry? I think about Paul as he approached in his captivity to Rome. And he is going to be, and he is chained basically to a Roman guard at that point, whether he was physically or not, he was under their authority. He will be chained when he is in Rome. And as he went toward Rome from there, the brethren heard about us, and they came all this far way out to the Epiphorum and the Three Inns. And when Paul saw them, he thanked God and took courage. You read that passage and realize Paul was scared. Paul was down. Paul thanked God and took courage. He needed encouragement. There may be a link here between burdens and law and Paul's usage. Remember, Moses' law is referred to in the New Testament as being a burden or a yoke that Peter said in Acts 15:10, neither we nor our fathers were able to bear. Jesus chastised in Luke 11:46, you load men with burdens hard to bear. Instead of imposing the law as a burden on others, they should rather lift their burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And it may be a play that Paul is doing. Our conduct toward others is governed by our opinion of ourselves. If we are conceited, if we are high opinion of ourselves, as we just talked about in that verse back in chapter 5, at the end of verse 5, chapter 5, then we're not going to do this. We're not going to bear the burdens of one another. You realize what we are talking about here is blue-collar work, not white-collar. It's like get down in the trenches, dirty, dig the ditches, manual labor. My son was in 4-H when we were growing up. We showed market meat goats. So we raised them too, so we were always having to be out the pens on Saturday. And if you know about goats, you're going to be cleaning pens. We were cleaning, pitchfork, he had his, I had mine. Finally, he just kind of leaned on his and he said, "Dad," he said, "manual labor is just not my thing." And I don't know, there's just something that wells up in a dad at that point. You know, it's sort of like, you know, that says, you know, I can make another one of you. And, you know, manual labor is going to be your thing because that's how you learn. Listen, manual labor has to be our thing in serving God's people. Ruth Harm Calkin wrote this poem, "I Wonder." "I wonder," she said, "you know how I serve you with great emotional fervor in the limelight? You know how eagerly I speak for you at a women's class? You know my genuine enthusiasm at a Bible study? But how would I react, I wonder, if you pointed to a basin of water and asked me to wash the calloused feet of a bent and wrinkled old woman day after day, month after month, in a room where nobody saw and nobody knew? I wonder." We are not something. I want you to underline it, mark it down. "For if anyone," verse 3, "thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself." You want to mark a verse that you need to have on your mirror when you wake up in the morning? My wife has scriptures on her mirror. Mark this one down. "When you are nothing." We're all nothing, folks. Now, we're something, aren't we? Because if we sell our own soul, all the world, Jesus says, not enough to make up for a man that sells his own soul. God loves every last one of us, but what's his point in sinning against him, in violating his will, in becoming those that need the Christ to save us from our sins? If we think we are something, if our mind elevates us, that there's nothing wrong with us. He's talking to Christians, folks. So he's not talking to the world. The world can hear this too and needs it. But he's talking to us. If we think we're something when we are nothing. The Gospel of Luke is full of nothings. The publican who smote his breast would not even look up to heaven. He said, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." Peter, who's seeing the great catch of fish, fell down at his knees and said, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." That woman who was a sinner, who came as his feet were stretched out and eating with the home of a Pharisee, and she came and began to let her tears fall off her face and washed his feet with the tears that fell from her face and dried them with the hair of her head. Well, that thief who hung suspended like ground meat between heaven and earth and will die there, the grisly death of crucifixion, a nothing, who reaches out and says, "Remember me when you come in your kingdom." You go through the book of Luke, you realize how many nothings there are. That prodigal son who fled, thought for freedom, but was so enslaved. And on that story can go. We are nothing. But God saves us and makes us something. He says at verses 4 through 5 something that might seem a contradiction. He says, "But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each one will have to bear his own load." And I'm looking at that going, wait a minute, you're supposed to bear loads, but it says here, bear others' loads, but you're supposed to bear your own load. They're two different words. The first word, bear one another's burdens, is a load that nobody can carry. Nobody can handle it. This last one is like a backpack. You ever see people going through, you know, especially I think of airports, you know, and they put on their backpack. You can carry that. That's the load we're talking about here. the load of helping someone else, the testing of whatever it is God asks us to do. So there are two different words and we need to see it. So here is his example. Verse 1. Brothers, if anyone is overtaken or caught in a transgression, you are spiritual, should restore him in a spirit of gentleness, and keep watching yourself, lest you also be tempted. What are we to do? We're to restore them. That word means that we are to put them back in order. It's a medical term. Like you fix a bone that is broken. What are you not to do? You're not to go stand by as if it's not any of our business. How many stand-byers in churches are there? I won't get involved with that. You ever get involved with the down and dirty stuff that you have to with people? Her kids have been sexually molested by their dad. She had gone to court. She had won them, but at a great cost. They still had to go see him. An evil judge and a more evil lawyer, just unbelievable. And when she would call us, and I'd look at the phone and I'd see her number, I knew that I'd be on the phone for the next 5 hours trying to help somebody through something I didn't even comprehend how. I was in my early 30s. I didn't want to, but I picked the phone up. I didn't know what I was doing, but I did the best I knew how. When you get down and work dirty with people, that is to bear burdens that they cannot bear, that's what it's going to be like. We're not to despise them and condemn them. Woman, where are thine accusers? They're not here, Lord. Then neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. We're not to report them, gossip about them. Love does not rejoice in iniquity. We are to set them back on the right course. He says, who is to do this? Those of you who are spiritual. That's not talking about the elders. I'm not talking about the preacher. In fact, if you go back into right before this, who walks in the Spirit? Do you walk in the Spirit? Do I walk in the Spirit? That's who's spiritual. So all of us are called to do this, to bear one another's burdens. And folks, that's one thing we can do. You think of the things that you can do for somebody. Bengel, who was a Johannes Bengel, a Middle Ages commentator, said, a whole argument lies hidden under this one word, brothers. Brothers, if you see a brother overtaken in a fall. And how do you do it? You do it in the spirit of gentleness. It's a learned process. Sometimes I just want to look at people and say, just stop doing it. You know, get over it. But you realize that they bear lots of baggage, that their lives were full of abuse or other things that you have not yet learned. And when you learn them, it helps you understand where they're coming from. I'm not given to this. Nobody is, I don't think. Maybe some a little more than others. But you have to learn how to do it in a spirit of gentleness. What a great passage of Scripture. I hope that we can implement it, because it's the difference between a really good church and a really great church. Thanks for listening this morning.